Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Can we all hear each other?
All right. Well, let's see. Apparently he was born in Denmark, but like that's because his, let's see.
His dad was
Italian from Naples, and his mother is African American from Alabama.
Ah, that's lovely.
Can you see somebody that
hurt? He was in Denmark when he was born.
Okay.
Hilda Myers.
Copenhagen.
Alrighty, so we should have Greg, we should have Louise, we should have Will. Y'all on here?
Yep. I'm here.
Alright, cool. Yeah, so I think we're good to go. So I can see about one other person, but yeah, other than that, pretty much what you're summing up. I mean, I can't think of anyone who hates this actor. I think he's been very fortunate, and since I read just so much of the, you know, what was playing on the TV guides and such, he was just one of those names, kind of like just many other actors who's like, I know that name, I kind of know the face, but
hey, it's that guy.
100%. Yeah, and
possibly in a Spike Lee joint.
Right. He was in a lot of those. He was in a bunch of comedies with, you know, Eddie Murphy types. And so it's just kind of wild how he had all these different avenues of which he was known for. Usual Suspects. And
in New York.
Of course, there's the classic line. Hey, how come there's no brothers on the wall? So that's his line from Do the Right Thing.
But.
Hey, and right. Now he's Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
He can have that. And I think it's just made all the more awesome that when he shows up on a show, he kind of, because he has the geek cred, he just kind of brings so many different auras. You know, people who know him from the gangster stuff, the Star Wars stuff, all the other procedurals, you know. You kind of want to see what he'll do. Is he going to do what he's been in and avoid typecasting by going a little extra more on it? Or is he going to even go even further, you know, even maybe be disturbing, you know?
He did a movie called Derail. He had a little part in the movie Derailed.
Yeah.
I was Clive Owen.
And he was like one of the cops, or was he one of the mob bosses?
He was a cop who was related to the RZA's character.
Oh, okay.
I know of that movie. I never saw it. So.
I have seen it twice, and I don't remember either viewing, so that tells you how much.
And like, yeah, I knew it had Clive Owen and Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Aniston.
Basically, it got destroyed by critics, but at the same time, like, a lot of people were praising the plot twist, and I was just like, so this is just a dangerous movie. You don't know what it's going to set off.
It was decent. I mean, it could have been better. But I mean, for what it's worth, it was all right.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. I just don't remember either viewing, so I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. Has a bunch of other actors you see in various things.
Exhibit, I think, was one of the thugs. So I was like,
yeah.
He was married to Monica Bellucci at one point. He's been a bunch of things.
I'm trying to remember the French guy in Derailed. I forget his name.
Vincent Castle. Yeah.
Vincent Castle.
He was also in like Black Swan. He was married to Monica Bellucci at one point, and
I didn't know that.
They were together for a while.
Really?
They did a few movies together too.
I didn't know that. I know Vincent Castle was also the voice of Robin Hood in Shrek.
Huh.
I did not know. Yeah. We know him from all these other violent movies, and yet
Esposito also voiced the new DuckTales series.
Oh, nice.
Somebody mentioned typecasting. I think that's interesting because I think he's had a really, really diversified career. I just want something to say something about that. I think it's funny because he's been diversified his whole career, but now I just watched The Mandalorian like 3 weeks ago. Like, I used to be a Star Wars fan. So I just watched it last 3 weeks ago. From his character in there, I'm not going to say they typecast him, but late in his career, I think people want him to bring that Gus Fring energy. Because that's what I got from his character. That's what I think, that quiet intensity, that, oh, shit, what's going to happen when this guy is here now? You know, like, I think that's honestly that he hit his mark 30-plus years into his career with Breaking Bad. I think that might be how Hollywood perceives him now. We need somebody cool as a cucumber but still intimidating. Let's call up Esposito.
Essentially, yeah.
That
was a great movie.
Well, yeah, but that's just it. He's making typecasts work for him as opposed to against him, to where he's very selective about the kind of projects he does.
Yeah. But when you've been an indie dog your whole career and you settle into your 50s, you can afford to be typecasting. Hey, man, you done put your good work and resume in. Make your money. Hollywood is flawed with talentless hacks who are getting paid checks that guys like you never could when you got in the industry.
I believe it. I did extra work, and basically half the time, I won't say what show I was on, I'll tell you after the show, but basically the people were very, you could tell how some of the crew members were kind of flustered, not really enjoying their time there, so they're just like, you saw what other credits they were on, it's like, they were just waiting to go back to Atlanta or, you know, wherever else. And get, or even LA in some cases, and get on that other show that they were part of. It's like, hey, I'm getting paid on this show that I could care less about. That's easy to make. Now I'm on this other show that I kind of more interested in. That's easy to make. So
people say shut up and be happy, but that can't be really good when you got work that you're most proud of that nobody seems to care about. But this thing right here sold a bunch of toys, so that's the guy you're known for.
Yeah, everyone thinks that because, you know, you didn't have any good luck working on it, that it was unworkable. It's like, no, I mean, you can be bored, but the people lensing it, editing it, making sure it's being done on time, they're making sure, you know, anything can be used.
Right.
That's why we see the visual style of some shows change after they switch to widescreen or whatever, you know?
Right. Well, not Zack Snyder, you know, he said, fuck all that. Put that bitch right in the middle of the team.
There you go. Digital. And it is kind of wild how we're so used to hearing someone, some obvious ADR, additional dialogue recording, while the back of someone's mouth isn't moving. They do it so more often than they used to now. It's like, it's not even funny. People want to look for that. What's the point?
I had to say ADR to my mom a few times because, like, when she brought up that someone sounded funny and something, like, they probably added that later. Like, they had to re-record their dialogue.
Yeah. People play around.
Sometimes it's less obvious than others. Sometimes they do a decent job. But other times, yeah, it's, like, incredibly obvious. They either filled it with no sound or they just took out all the sound and added new sound.
That's good to show you not all Hollywood is equal, especially like with stuff like audio and special effects. Like, you know what Marvel does? Look, I think that stuff looks amazing compared to all the bad CGI I used to see 20 years ago. But then you go out and see something like Mortal Kombat where Goro is in it for a short period of time because they didn't want to finance too much screen time. And he looks kind of funky when he moves, but when he's standing still, he looks great.
I haven't seen that.
Hollywood for you.
Yeah. I mean, we liked it. Most of us here generally like stuff like The Expendables, but if you, some stuff also isn't meant to be paused. So people are pausing stuff and they're like, oh, the blood looks fake. I'm like, yeah, it wasn't meant to be. It wasn't meant to be paused. And
sure.
We were talking another day on how CinemaSins has kind of invited all the curious and the snobs to just kind of be bothered by everything. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. Now you're just trying to spill milk that, you know, doesn't deserve to be spilled. You know?
It's ironic.
Some of them are ironic. Some of them...
Well, I said more, like...
Well, that...
Some of their early stuff, you could just be like, oh, this is just nitpick, being pretending to be a different person. But then they're trying to just flat out either get things wrong or they intentionally...
I know you're here this weekend, so... I'll be here. Have a good night.
Like, it's one thing... If you're going to make fun of a movie, you typically at least should still actually make fun of it proper. Like
exactly. Like, don't make fun of an intentional blooper that they put in there, as opposed to...
Don't make up things and edit the clip in a way that deceives
right. Me. I only saw it when I slowed it down to less than, you know, 5-second frames. It's like, well, then, yeah, obviously now you're going to see something like the shadow of a camera, the reflection of the stunt guy, the sure. boom mic above the guy. It's like stuff you otherwise wouldn't see.
There are movies where you can see that stuff right in frame regardless because it's an amateur production. I mean, hell, Dolomite, you see the camera operator's head, the boom mic operator's head.
Right, and then so, you look at the backstory, is like those people were fresh out of college, had no training whatsoever.
Now, a big budget film, that might happen just because hey, they're making a movie fast. You can't always catch everything.
Yeah, and I mean...
You can also delete or digitally erase a lot of that stuff, too.
You can digitally erase it, and at the same time, I guess you could say they're spoiled, and I kind of would hate to be the director in this day and age, because basically you could sign away your life. People could do reshoots behind your back and you'd be fired without warning.
True.
And at the end of the day, people are going to, who don't know how this works, are instantly going to say, oh, those visual effects, I fucking hate that director. It's like, he had nothing to do about that. And they're so old, they don't really know what audiences do or don't find believable. So it's an even bigger clusterfuck. And I think Giancarlo's just been good at navigating these clusters. He's been good at just doing all sorts of TV. I don't remember who he played on New York Undercover, but I finished Homicide: Life on the Street recently, and he's really good.
New York Undercover?
Yeah, like 3 episodes. I don't know if he played like a gang member or a narc, but I think he was like a brother of some character. But Homicide was a great role because he plays the late, great Yaphet Kotto's estranged son.
Oh, and cool.
He's part Italian, part black in that one, and that's pretty cool because... Basically, you don't know what's eating him or his father. There's just, you know that they can't stand to be in the same room. Yeah. And at one point, he's kind of viewed as an unofficial outside man because, you know, he's a liaison to the FBI and the Baltimore police. And some
wasn't secrets. He an American gangster?
I think you're thinking of Joe Morton.
Okay. I'm like, I know he's in some.
But yeah, he is in just so many movies where it's like, I'll pick him out. I don't know who he plays in King of New York, but I'm willing to
read that. Was just the next. He was the big mouth dude in King of New York.
I only just remember Fishburne, Crusoe, Wesley Snipes, and Teresa Randall being really slutty at the party. Yeah.
I don't know. When I think of Giancarlo, I always think of him as that guy, like you guys said.
I'll have to rewatch it. So he does like a dance or something, or is it Walken who does a dance?
In almost every movie.
Yeah, Walken and Wishbone.
It's been a while.
I've got to go that movie again.
So is there any room to talk about how he got killed by the arcade machines in Maximum Overdrive? A movie I will not tolerate anybody here shitting on.
I actually don't remember that, so now I gotta. So there you go. All I remember mainly.
Pluto or Tubi. It's on one of the free streaming services. I'm sure it is.
I'm sure Shudder or Prime got it on there. What I find funny is how some people mainly seem to know, recognize him instantly as playing Eddie Murphy's cellmate in Trading Places. And that's barely, it's not that long a scene. That's like 2 minutes. And for whatever reason, he just stood out.
Well, I would say to be fresh. That, I think that's the first time that
definitely
I
definitely the first one
realized with me, that's who he was.
Yeah. I didn't remember how he talked or anything, but I just remember he was in that movie. He was a big part, one of the main gangsters that was causing shit. Going through the director's episode of Spike Lee, I was able to do my homework and catch up on, you know, the movies I've seen by him. You know, I knew he was in, the college movie, But I forgot he was part of the Kill Squad at Malcolm X. So I was like, that's interesting. So,
I didn't know that.
The Right Thing. He's the one instigator. Yeah,
bugging out.
Yeah, bugging out. Yeah.
Yeah, he's bugging out about the Wall of Fame. And he joins up with Radio Raheem.
Absolutely. And
Cool Days.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
He's the leader of a...
You mean Big Brother Almighty? That's more a lot of people... In the hood, knowing from that, he's a fucking jerk. Great,
absolutely. So I'll mention some other roles for you guys. And I watched way too much TV than I ever should, but I'll just some roles that really stood out to me, some guest star roles, some other recurring gigs, some other indie films he was a part of. There was a short lived Law and Order spinoff called Trial by Jury that just showed the behind the scenes of the legal process. And in one really cool episode, well, it's actually morbid, he plays totally against type, playing a Hispanic gangster, and who basically kills the boyfriend of his gay kid. And then to add insult to injury, you know, he already, you know, is doing the whole no snitching, but then he's totally disowning his son all the same because he's like, oh, he's a faggot. And it's like, whoa. So you didn't even have to do this murder. And yet at the same time, it's just like, he was nothing to you. And so it was just a very intricate role. One movie that you can definitely check out on Netflix that's kind of like a more social version kind of The Purge or even The Running Man, called The Show. And he also directed it, but it was kind of a more realistic version of that, of if people were to be like on a Maury or Jerry Springer type show and just be tricked into killing themselves for ratings. It really does do a good job of showing how divisive the whole thing is. And
it's too hard to be better than The Purge.
It's way better, but I mean, I'm just giving an example because there's plenty of pop cultural reference movies that, sure, like them or hate them, they're in, like, you go back to the cyberpunk movies of the 90s, for everyone who mentions, you know, Strange Days or Johnny Mnemonic, there's going to be someone else who mentions, you know, Virtuosity or Hackers, you know, so I'm just giving that as a parallel. But the show, totally check it out on Netflix. It just shows you how power can corrupt, and I think it'll definitely be more rewarding to more people, especially for the other cast members that are in it, and for doing good on its premise instead of just kind of sitting on it and just fapping around, not doing anything. Another criminally underrated show that has never been released on DVD except in the UK is probably Chicago Hope. I don't know if anyone grew up watching that in the 90s.
I remember it. I mean, my mom watched so many of the...
Mine watched it too, and it was one of those, she didn't set the VHS recorder, so she'd always have to just rush in and say, don't call me now. You know, I gotta watch it.
That was the one that started out with Patinkin, right? Mandy Patinkin?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Adam Arkin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yep.
Great, just kick-ass cast. David E. Kelly produced, but he has... I was fortunate enough to see his episode earlier this year. I've seen the whole thing. It's a damn good show that I swear by, but he plays a drag queen infected with HIV who lies about his mother about his infection. And this is a cool role too, because this is like the probably the earliest role, I guess, aside from Sesame Street, where you can actually see him, you know, his him actually sing.
Oh,
I mean, you've seen it. Anyone who's seen him like appear on some of the late night shows promoting stuff, like on, you know, any of the Jimmys or Conan, he often will break into song, and he does it even. I'll mention more of other amusing musical stuff that he shows off. I don't really know of any other movie or show roles where he shows that, but he is a pretty talented singer. That's the other funny thing.
His mother was an opera singer.
Oh, okay. So there you go. Runs in the family. But
I looked this up.
I would applaud him if he could show up on one of those comedic bands like Tenacious D or something.
There was a movie I saw where he did perform a bit of a song. It was called Blue in the Face.
Oh yeah, that's like
it's like a semi sequel to Smoke. It stars.
That's the one I'm thinking. Yeah,
yeah.
Is it as good as Smoke, you think, or is it?
I mean, it's got a lot more loose of a plot to it, because really it's just a bunch of vignettes. It's even more of a bunch of vignettes of the first movie, but I think it's got a lot of good stuff in it. Worth seeing, because there's a lot of, you know, fun character actors appearing in there. Not just like, you got Harvey Keitel, you got Jared Harris is in it. He's a fun actor. Richard Harris's son. Lou Reed appears in there as himself.
Oh wow.
Victor Hart was in a lot of things. Keith David, you don't see him, like, you see him from behind, but he's playing Jackie Robinson. Like, someone's I mean, it's Keith David, so it's like, hey, I could listen to him talk about anything.
It is wild how Giancarlo could have been kind of like Keith David, where he's a B-movie actor who's appearing in as many, you know, well-known theatrical stuff as well as, you know, made-for-TV direct-to-video crap that he makes more watchable. And yeah, he kind of avoids that. He really just kind of just does festival stuff.
Oh, yeah. Fox appeared in it, too.
Oh, nice. Okay, so...
Also, Roseanne Barr, Lily Tomlin, Vera Spino.
Jesus, this is a great cast. So,
like, a lot of these are very small, like, one-scene roles, but yeah, like, this is really, like, before Mira Sorvino got really big, and this is, like, probably when Michael J. Fox was slowing down acting because of his Parkinson's.
There you go. It's a historical movie all the same, too.
Yeah.
Talking about Giancarlo Esposito.
Oh, okay.
He did Ra's al Ghul voice in one of the Batman movies. I think it was something Batman animated.
I think so. He did. I think I did see that on his resume. He was like credited for like one of the recent DC cartoons.
Harley Quinn.
Okay, so there you go. I mean,
he was on Once Upon a Time. I don't know how many episodes of that Joby was on, but that shows
there. Not sure. On Amazon Prime, if you want, you can rent this one festival movie he did where it's kind of like a Sidney Lumet kind of movie. It's called The Keeper from 95. And basically, he just played a man just defending a homeless black man who can't defend himself. And for whatever reason, he just has a presumption about, he's like, I think this guy is innocent, but because of the bias and utter bullshit in the district attorneys, I got to basically defend him. I'm the only one interested in defending him. So I am the dude. It was kind of like a stage play. Sorry.
He appeared in the Bong Joon-ho.
No me diga que se enfermó de nuevo.
No.
I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Like,
you talking about your sister.
Oh, I think I saw that.
Sure. He made it before Parasite. Bong Joon was, I think.
Yeah, I think I know the one you're talking about. It was kind of another corporation kind of sci-fi movie.
Like OKJA's Oka or Okja. I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
I know the dude you're talking about, but yeah, yeah. I can't pronounce or shit either.
Yeah, I'm looking up like some roles. Some that I've seen in like there's the Jim Jarmusch film Night on Earth.
Gotcha.
The New York segment of the movie.
Anybody ever seen Cotton Club? Francis Coppola?
I'm sorry. I say that one more time.
Cotton Club?
Oh, yeah. Cotton Club. So he's in that one as well.
It's funny because in there he plays an amalgamated character, but he's generally regarded as inspired by Bumpy Johnson, old Harlem gangster, whom Fishburne played in Oakland. But there's a TV show now called, was it The King of Harlem? And it's where
that's right.
Forrest Whitaker's playing Bumpy Johnson, but because Esposito's on there playing Adam Quayton Powell. So I'm like, oh, that's a real interesting circle. Like all three of them guys kind of all. Like related and shit, they've been in movies together and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Fishburne, well, as I recall, Fishburne was playing the Bumpy Johnson equivalent in that, but he was in Hoodlum as well. But yeah, Whitaker gets to play him, and Esposito, he's like a key, like criminal alliance, kind of guy in that show. I haven't yet seen his appearance on The Boys, and I've been rewatching Community, but I know he basically has some comedic segments in those shows. Basically, he can't go wrong with just, he's going to play an unpredictable kind of badass on either side of the law. You also know that he just makes, he knows how to ham it up without overdoing it, I think is the best way.
I mean, he's very good at comedy.
Absolutely. Just perfect timing. Did anyone ever see Revolution?
Sure.
It was the post-apocalyptic show where all the power goes out. It's basically Lord of the Rings in the forest.
Huh.
And he just back and forth, good guy, bad guy, but really formally a bad guy, just part of a kill squad. Now he wants his own new world order where he's working against both the heroes and the current villains. And he does have some dry remarks, and it's not... That's basically his first collaboration with Jon Favreau prior to The Mandalorian. So there you go.
He also Jungle Book.
Yeah, that's right. He is in that. But Revolution, I totally recommend because, like, if you get the DVDs, you can see some hysterical bloopers.
Oh, nice.
And some of those takes end up making the actual episodes where he's having a dry, witty remark before he engages in a sword fight. But then there's some other ones where he just flat out just bursts into song just to make his co-stars laugh. So he's a prankster. He's a total jokester. And
that's good. Awesome. I think I've seen him some interviews where he seemed like a cool guy.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to see any mischief other than being a class clown briefly, maybe at a drama school. I don't think you're going to see anything.
Right. Have you seen the movie Night on Earth?
Night on.
It's a Jim Jarmusch movie. It's like five different cities on the same night, all involving.
Probably years ago.
Each setting is Los Angeles, New York, Paris, Rome, and Helsinki. And he's in the New York segment.
Okay, very cool. Does he get to sing that one too?
Who gets picked up by a cab driver who's from Germany, and like he doesn't quite know how to drive, so Yo-Yo agrees to drive for him to get him to Brooklyn. And along the way, they pick up his sister-in-law, Angela, played by Rosie Perez.
Oh, shit, yeah.
She shouts at him pretty much the whole time, gets pissed off the whole time, and like curses up a storm, and the old guy in the driving the cab, like, he finds it amusing. I think his name's Helmet. The actor. And the Los Angeles segment, it's Winona Ryder and Rollins. In Rome, it's Roberto Benigni.
That's cool.
Who worked with Garvin a few times.
Shit. What happened? Damn it. Nope. What's going on here, guys?
I'm still here.
Shit. Damn it.
Do you still hear me?
Yeah, sorry. My bad.
Yeah.
I lose you. Sorry.
Yeah, that one came out in 91.
Okay. What's going on? Everything okay there, guys?
I mean, I'm still hearing you. I don't think I hear anyone else though.
Will, you still there?
Oh, I think I heard someone else.
Good.
What's going on here? God damn it. Okay. Anyway, yeah. So you were saying he had a big role in the Jim Jarmusch movie?
Yeah, like in the New York segment. Like, it's five different segments. I guess each one's maybe around half hour longer or so, but yeah, basically involving a different cab driver and their passenger. He's just trying to get back to Brooklyn, but can't get a cab. Then a cab finally gets him, but it's this German immigrant who doesn't know how to work the stick shift, so he drives for it.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And they bond a little bit, and Rosie Perez up here because he finds her somewhere. I forget where exactly, but she's also take her.
I know there's some people who know him probably for his bit parts in like Harley Davidson, The Marlboro Man, or Money Monster. I unfortunately don't recall him in either of those, but I know I saw Rabbit Hole last holiday, and even Maze Runner Free, which he's in the trailer for. He and the other cast members made that worth watching just because the other two were just so disappointing, just generic. And yeah, he just was having so much fun.
Attempt to get some of that sweet Hunger Games money.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the books have something worth adapting. I mean, the story sounds interesting enough, at least.
Honestly, I think it's pretty much about how you brainstorm versus the art direction versus the interest level. And I think what so many of these things do is they just oversaturate everything to where everyone's basically a hired gun and just going through the motions. And it's like, it just has to catch your interest or it doesn't, because there's nothing going to be really groundbreaking about it. It just has to be a visual spectacle that's interesting.
Yeah. I find it weird seeing Kate Winslet in the Divergent movies, just like,
yeah,
like, sure, I know why you're doing this because you get a paycheck, but you're just like, oh, you're so much better than this.
And you really can't tell any of these apart from each other. And then you just realize it's just going back to the whole hard target running man formula from even years ago.
You're the chosen one. Oh, of course.
Yeah, virtually every story is you're the chosen one. Oh, man. I know he has a brief part in the Carlito's Way prequel.
Oh, yeah. God, that had a prequel.
Oh, Lord. So wild.
Not very good.
Probably. I mean, he's been in some very sparingly direct-to-video movies, but I think you could say some of the bad movies he's in are just at least so bad they're hysterical, and they're really not going to affect anyone because most people are going to not remember being in it.
It definitely has a memorable cast. Looking up Luis Guzman, who's in so many things.
So there you go.
Burt Young.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's Twilight Year, so I guess he's not going to, there's not much he's going to say no to at this point, just to have some money.
I don't recall him in Big City Blues, which was pretty unwatchable because of whoever had mastered it. Just, it wasn't bearable to watch, but that was just a bad Burt Reynolds movie, so what do you expect? Blind Horizon was the only one I don't remember by him, and that was just the beginning of Val Kilmer's descent into, you know, shit. I know he's in a movie with Gabriel Union that I've been wanting to watch that I always see at the video stores called The Box. No relation. And he's also with the Raza in that one, so there you go.
Oh, yeah. He was in that movie Sherry Baby with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
I forgot about that, so there you go.
I saw it years ago. I remember liking it. Like, it's sad.
Yeah, it's a good one.
A lot of good performances.
Yeah, it's a good one. I just...
Oh, Danny Trejo appears in it, too. That's right.
There you go.
I mean...
As the guess, love interest, for once. So there you go.
I guess if you hear Danny Trejo's in something, it's like, well, I mean, he's in so many things that's not that surprising.
Yeah. A heist movie I think you guys will like that he's in with Ray Liotta and called Phoenix. And this is just an interesting noir kind of swindle film.
I do like Ray Liotta as well.
There you go. When I was going through a bunch of these independent DVDs that I got in at Big Lots, I saw a trailer for one of them that had him and Ron Perlman called Poker Night. And just kind of another, just kind of 10 Little Indians, but around gamblers. And it's like, okay, well, this looks interesting.
Ron Perlman's also entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely.
But rarely is he not entertaining at some point. I mean, every so often I see a movie of his where he's kind of like looking like, I'd rather be somewhere else, but most of the time he is still trying.
Yeah. Never any moment where he's not giving his all, but at the same time, it's hard to not see the deep hurting in their eyes at times.
I mean, I know. He's easily the best part of Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's fun in that. He's clearly having a time there, though. Like, behind the scenes, you can tell he's having a good time.
Oh. There's one movie that he also did. Oh God, it was a really bad movie with Scott Glenn and Courtney B. Vance called Naked City. It was loosely inspired by the show of the same name. And long story short, Showtime thought, you know, we'll just make it R-rated. We don't have to necessarily have a good story. And it's like, well, you're wrong. It's a stinker. But
Also has Scott Glenn, who's another reliable character actor.
Absolutely.
Oh, Eli Wallach. Wow.
He was in Peter Benchley's Creature, which was a miniseries at the time. I think that was a decent Jurassic Park kind of movie show. I can't say he's ever really had any bad roles, really. I mean, he's pretty often pretty well used. I know he was in the miniseries 5 Days to Midnight, which was a pretty big Sci-Fi Channel event.
Oh, man, he was in that movie Monkey Bone. I saw that. I think I appreciate. I saw that in theaters, like, back in
the day. One of the voices, right?
He played the character Hypnos.
I think that's a voice role.
Yeah, because I know Gregory Hines played the character in it, I'm pretty sure.
He must have really picked a lot of people's brains just being on the Broadway scene, and just in so many different shows. He just being able to do voices and auditioning nonstop. Because you'll see plenty of other things on Miami Vice 3 different times, on guest starring on the original Equalizer and Spencer for Hire. So there you go. An episode of Fallen Angels. Jesus, that's years ago. One of my favorite guest appearances by him is definitely his second appearance on NYPD Blue as a homeless guy who Jimmy Smits helps get comfortable and basically be able to drink his water that he can't otherwise access. But yeah, he's had plenty of other roles. Third Watch, The Practice, there you go.
Yeah, those were plenty of shows I remember.
Bones.
I don't know if I watched many full episodes of Homicide or something like that, or Third Watch, but I definitely remember them being on TV at my house or like my grandma's house or something like that.
It's pretty much stood the test of time. It was even cooler looking at it now because it's just great soundtracks, you know, a lot of alternative rock and electronic bands that are still used today that are well used. Edgy editing and just not a single boring episode. The Detective Munch character played by comedian Richard Belzer later on the Law and Order shows is way more cynical over the top there. Yeah. There's just some other wacky stuff.
I do remember him more on Special Victims Unit though, because like I saw more of that growing up.
Right.
With
they gave him a good send off because they actually like referenced and even showed footage from that other show, and it's like, that's cool to wrap it up because that's where he started and that's where he ends.
Yeah.
Good on Giancarlo though, because I mean, he got to even be in the wrap up TV movie in a key assassination role. And
oh, wow.
Cool. He wasn't the assassin, he was just in the aftermath witnessing it because someone close to him is affected, and you got to see him be tough guy holding back, you know, not tearing up, but just being like, what the fuck's going on here? You know?
Huh. He was in an episode of the Nero Wolf Mysteries, a show from 2001 and 2.
Yeah, so there you go. The Timothy Hutton.
Yeah, my mom has that on DVD with, Maury Chaykin.
So do I. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, Maury Chaykin is Nero, which another great character actor.
Didn't he die recently? Or?
He died, 2010, so not super recent, but yeah. But he was another guy who, when he was around, he was in a lot of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is like how anyone keeps up with any of this stuff is, anyone's guess. I know he's on the other shows I've seen him on besides, all this other stuff we've talked about. I know he guest stars on the other Timothy Hutton show, Leverage. There you go. There's a connection. Yeah. He's in a brief key segment of the show Kidnapped, which aired like in around 06, 07, and that was a pretty kick-ass show. Mm-hmm. Two episodes of that. Going back through his list, I was like, who did he play on CSI Miami? I was like,
oh, yeah.
That's right. He's the mysterious Brazilian police chief.
That was another one I watched play with my mom. We loved making fun of the quips.
There was just something about it. Yeah, it was so stylish. They would do shit that doesn't work in any other format. And yet, for whatever reason, it just worked there. And at the same time, like you say, there was just some unintentionally amusing stuff like T.J. Hooker.
They seem to always solve the crimes in one day, too.
Yeah.
It was never nighttime there.
The only time it doesn't get solved is if it's a two-parter or if it's a big boss for the season.
Kind of like how CSI, regular CSI, almost always took place at night.
Right. It's rarely like, day. See? No one's ever done that before. Yes, they have.
Which, that had William Peterson for a while. Then he left. And
we talked about that previously on the Lawrence Fishburne episode, how he brought a whole different kind of persona. And yet at the same time, the show was just kind of like, let's just open and close with gory shootouts and a weird demented serial killer that only exists in fiction.
Yeah.
It's like, gone is the suspense, but it's better than the New York one. Where it's like, bomb diffuse, stuff that only happens. And then we got to go home and we got to get laid.
Another one we watch plenty of just because we like Gary Sinise and all the other cast members. So
there you go, because nothing else about it really works.
I mean, most crime shows, it's like, this stuff's not getting solved that quickly. Or as stylishly.
Right. But it only makes sense by comic book logic.
It's mostly dull paperwork and asking people questions.
Absolutely. Like
John Mulaney has done like two stand-up bits about Law and Order, then another one about SVU, like talking about Law and Order, how like you always have the same characters, basically. You're talking to a guy on the street who's like stacking boxes, but he's still doing that job while talking about those suspects.
Right. Most of us, we can't do any of those at the same time, and yet it must be a New York thing.
Oh, yeah, I know. He used to work here on Tuesdays.
Right. I knew him. He was a good guy.
Bartender who recognizes a picture of someone, even though he's probably seen dozens of people and hundreds of people in one night.
Right. He only recognizes them because apparently this guy, he keeps coming back and not getting thrown out.
He seemed nervous.
Right.
Like, I'll let it slide, but you better watch yourself, McCoy. Or just like SVU, Ice-T was always surprised by like the sex crimes, despite being in the sex crimes division. You're saying this guy's into girls with ponytails?
Right. He's not used to that kind of fetish. It's like, what? Oh man.
You say he likes little girls?
I thought he was just a statutory rapist.
Meanwhile, Munch will bring up some kind of conspiracy.
Right, because he's a conspiracist in real life, so there you go. They're writing for them.
these rich corporate fat cats with their Swiss bank accounts.
Oh, Jesus. So there you go. Giancarlo should play a conspiracy theorist. That would be funny.
He could definitely he definitely could have the manic energy for it. If he's still able to pull off the manic energy, like, and do the right thing.
Yeah, oh, that would be great. Yeah, him starting, saying some truth, and then starting a fight, that'd be great. He's apparently on an episode of Westworld. I think I saw that episode. I gotta go back to that. I know he's part of the assassin show Jet, and he was in an episode of Creepshow, which I was not a fan of, but...
I see it, but I didn't hear great things.
Yeah, a lot of people were going crazy on it, and I was just bored, but...
He voiced an antagonist on DuckTales called Phantom Blots.
He basically tried
to, like, rid the world of magic by, like, basically using magic devices to get rid, to like suck it up, to keep it out of other people's hands.
Was he more subtle in the voice, or was he all just balls out, just crazy?
I say going for menacing, like still comedic here and there, but like basically he saw Scrooge McDuck as a menace because of how often he used magic to like get ahead in things.
Oh, perfect.
Because basically the show establishes that Scrooge uses a lot of magical means in order to like keep himself youthful. He's like 150 years old, but he's like gone to the fountain of youth. He's used various kinds of ways to like keep himself young.
Perfect.
So I guess he's essentially like circumstantially immortal. Like he can still be harmed, but like he can't die from old age. I guess like Master Roshi on Dragon Ball.
Oh, perfect. So basically he's pointing out the character's flaws while he's got some flaws of his own.
Yeah.
It takes a hypocrite to know another hypocrite.
That character was in a few episodes. That was a fun series. It ended recently, which only had like 3 seasons, but still it was a good run while they had, and they did a lot of callbacks to older Disney shows I liked.
That's good. He's on also, I don't know if anyone ever watched BET. There was some funny shit on there on occasion. He was apparently on a John Singleton produced vigilante crime show called Rebel. It was not good.
Oh yeah, back in 2020, a bunch of celebrities like did quarantine versions of like redoing the princess, like season of the Princess Bride. He did one too, playing the grandfather character. Apparently.
Oh really? Nice.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh man, so you can basically say he's conquered geekdom. Because, I mean, you're doing voiceovers on stuff like Axe Cop, and I think some people have seen his episode of Drunk History. I think I saw that one, and it was pretty balls out. It's like, yeah, and it's true. It happened.
Yeah, he did. He was a recurring character on Once Upon a Time, which was popular with my nieces.
Perfect.
Yeah, because, like, he played, like, a character named Sidney Glass, who apparently was also, like,
Magic Mirror.
So he was in that. So, I mean, that show when it was on was pretty popular. So I'm sure that, and I think it might still be syndicated. I'm not sure.
I don't think it is yet, but it won't take much.
It's streaming. I know it's streaming somewhere. It might still be streaming.
If it's streaming, someone's going to watch it. I think basically you could say, much like his Mandalorian co-star Pedro Pascal, people like him so much on that, they're bound to go through his earlier stuff eventually.
That's usually what happens. If I see an actor stuff I start liking, I check out. First thing I probably recall seeing him might have been Usual Suspects when I was like in middle school. fairly small role compared to everyone else, but still, but important to the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like not other cast, but still what his role in there is, like, yeah, integral to the plot.
I think I saw his episode of Lie to Me, but it's been years. I'm going through Bones all over again. I'm gonna definitely encounter him by the end of like the first or second season.
we've binged some of my mom and I binged some of that a while too.
It's just a fun show, but
oh yeah,
it also got a little formulaic in places to where it's like, don't think about this too hard.
Most of the characters were enjoyable, so that helped.
That's exactly it. Just the electronic music and
one of my nieces, she was like, I think 6 when we saw this episode. This guy who's like trying to vandalize a billboard, he ends up falling and like he gets stuck to a course because he's got industrial strength glue on him. like 6 or 7, but she found it hilarious.
Oh, I'm sure, because someone had to think that up and try and take it serious.
To get the remains off of them. I think they had to use peanut butter and something else to dissolve the glue.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Also, one of the tech, Angela, her dad was one of the guys from ZZ Top within the narrative.
Oh, Bill, sweet.
Billy Gibbons. Which, that's fucking cool. Dusty Hill on King of the Hill was Hank Hill's cousin. Which Hank was embarrassed by, because of course.
Oh, perfect.
Because Hank's all uptight and he's a rock star, so.
Oh, man.
Kids today in the rock
briefly,
and roll.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was like, kids today in the rock and roll music, they should be more concerned with propane.
I would think they would be, but
propane and propane accessories.
I mean, especially before you put that on paper and adapt it. But I think it's cool though that he's been able to get a lot of shows even before he was even truly known, where he was the main star, because I guess he was affordable, he showed up, people liked him, so they just wanted to work around him. Yeah. I mean, I've seen a bunch of other canceled shows, and not once, but at least three different times, he was the lead star on those, and it's like, apparently he was on this, like, cop comedy show called Bakersfield PD, but I definitely saw him briefly on the UPN show Swift Justice, which was just fun. It was kind of like the Equalizer. He's on this other Wall Street type show called The Street that was kind of a sitcom, just people misbehaving while they, you know, gamble on the stock market. But I'm even more impressed. I mean, just seeing all these other credits he's got, you know, Soul Food,
Living Single episode of that show.
Absolutely, that show is still a hoot.
I remember that show.
It's still a hoot, and I'm glad Hulu has put it up so some people can say, hey, you know, Queen Latifah didn't just start out on Sesame Street or
'90s.
'90s stuff, just unlike any other.
Everything baggy clothes with lots of layers.
well, it helps that it's in both the substance and the style. Nowadays, everyone just goes for the style. It's like, but there's nothing here. There's nothing here. It's apparently on a spy show called Allegiance. I think he's like a weapons courier or something on that. It was another one that got shafted by ratings, but I always heard was pretty kick-ass.
Oh, wow. He was an episode of Touched by an Angel. I remember that show.
I was just waiting for someone to bring that up.
I definitely remember that show.
Oh, man. Oh, God. I don't think I ever saw an episode all the way through except for the Jack Black one.
If I did, it was, again, probably because I was either watching with my mom or watching it, like, with my aunt.
Some of that stuff does kind of rub you the wrong way when you realize, oh, but they're not addressing all these other issues of today's world. They're just kind of if you pray, I'll save you. That's the moral of every episode. That kind of
he's in the show. Yeah, on the show called Strong Medicine, which was on Lifetime.
That's a great show.
It had one actress from Northern Exposure in it for a few seasons. Turner. Yeah, that's it, Janine Turner. Then it had the mom. Turner, had the mom from Home Improvement for a while.
Oh, damn! So basically, you basically just repeat. You go through everything. It was like doctor show, medical show,
yeah,
a comedy show, and then repeat.
I wish he was on an episode of Cop Rock.
Oh dear.
I mean, I never saw that show, but when I've learned of his existence, I was like, oh wow. And I've told my friends about it. They're just like, yes, this was a thing that really happened.
Yeah, it shouldn't have, but you know, probably inspired all these other comedy shows on Adult Swim for all we know.
Like, part of me is glad it happened just because it's like,
it's not like anything else.
Weird things that people come up with for TV.
Right. To just,
and one of the main casters for that show was in the movie Nightbreed.
Right.
Yeah.
My God. How do you get on? Someone must be casting for all these shows and Clyde Barker.
Well, I think that was. I think Nightbreed was before Cop Rock. I don't know.
That's hysterical.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, though, that he is one of many guys where he's using his likeness. He's doing motion capture and the acting on some of these video games. So, I mean, I don't think his oyster of fans is going to get any, you know, cheap anytime soon, even before Star Wars card got played. I mean, I do think it's cool that he's gotten almost every kind of award nomination, like the independent ones, you know, getting an MTV award, a Saturn award, you know, which was, you know, for a lot of sci-fi stuff, a primetime Emmy.
He's got 4 Emmy nominations.
Yeah. So this would not be complete if, you know, we didn't do some Breaking Bad, Gus Fring talk. What was your first impression when you just kind of opened up to him? Did you think he was just going to be like a brief, like 5-episode role, or did you?
Oh, I'll admit, I've so far only seen season 1 of Breaking Bad. Like, it was one of those shows that while it was on, I knew it was around. I'd been meaning to check it out, but hadn't yet.
I was kind of the same way. I'm just like, okay, they're making fun of it on SNL. I've heard all about it. I get the reference. I just haven't actually seen it.
But like, what I have seen so far, I've seen all of season 1. I've loved that so far. And like, my brother has declared it like the best show he's ever seen.
Yeah. Although, to be fair, I mean, at first I didn't really think I was going to really explode on it, because I just kind of saw how it was so influenced by other stuff like The Shield and The Wire. But it does kind of hold its own, especially when you get to Better Call Saul. You know, just because it's involving a lawyer doesn't mean it's even typical of any kind of legal show. I mean, even the courtroom scenes aren't filmed like a typical legal show. It's kind of wild how everyone basically agrees that him and Mike the Hitman, played by Jonathan Banks, everyone just agrees, like, the show would just not even be the same without those guys, let alone Pinkman, you know? It's just, I mean, because after a while, I mean, without spoiling it, I mean, the character is, you know, to the point of, you know, there's no more even questioning him. He's going, the stakes are raising, and he goes through a different morality twist. And I think it's interesting how, you know, both Mike and Gus are introduced, you know, in the fold where they are now, which is, you know, unlikable psycho from hell. And then you see these flashbacks, and it's just like, oh, but it started this way or that way. That was a tragic. I understand them. I see where they basically just, they put their morals, left them at the door and just said, I got to just survive. And if I got to be a dick. And I think it's just brilliant that he is basically playing a McDonald's type, like, well, not McDonald's. It's more like a KFC, but Mexican themed. And
El Pollo's Anos.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's like getting like McDonald's like numbers. Like, so many people are just filling it. It's like, if not McDonald's, at least Brahms. It's definitely a kind of place you could see existing in anywhere. And I just love how he goes to all these charity banquets and everything. Everyone's like, he's cool. It's like, yeah. And at night, everyone fears him. Even people in the kitchen are afraid they'll get fired by him, if not killed. And I think that show just benefits. It does so much psychological evaluations of everyone. It's just like, you know what? It never had to be just in an interrogation room. It can just be people staring in the mirror at home and some dread music or other atypical stuff. Just, you know, the surprises are laid out. And I like how more shows are doing that now, because for a while they seemed afraid to even go there. Everything had to be a formula.
I'm pretty sure from the get-go was planned to be like a 5-season series.
It really was. They just let people lay it out, saying, we will do this. We will never do something like this or that, or begin an episode like that. And it helps that every episode, you never know what to expect, because it always begins atypical.
Yeah.
So I guess you could say it just defied expectations. And when you see the other people who were attached to play the role, it's like, nah, they just knew.
Yeah.
And they thought it would be just one season, because often everything is, if it's just too good and people don't promote it, it gets canceled. But they lucked out. And
so many great shows that only lasted, if either last season or only 2 seasons, and you're just like, oh, you idiots, why did you do that?
Right. Some numbers back.
I mean there's been a couple shows recently of that, a lot of just like, where I've heard they got canceled, I'm just like, no, I'm liking this show. Why do you got to do that to me?
Yeah, the fact that it took years for, like, reunion movies or even that is, like, that's ridiculous. I mean, should have wrapped it up then and there, and then, you know. Like, I'm still waiting on that movie version of Rome.
Oh, I guess that one. I saw clips of it here that I don't think I ever watched at all, but I heard good things, and it got.
Yeah. You'll definitely dig it, but it is one of those. They canceled it not just because it wasn't even necessarily because of ratings. It was because it was expensive to produce.
Oh, man, Dead Like Me,
a great show.
That had Manny Patinkin in that, and oh man, the movie was so disappointing.
Yeah, the movie could have been so much better, but at the same time,
it didn't help they didn't get Manny Patinkin back. It didn't help they had a different actress play Daisy because Lauren Harris was busy with the show.
Yeah, that was some bullshit. And no, to their credit, I mean, I think the actress was
trying. The cast is.
But yeah, like you say, no one even seems to remember it. I'm like, for real? It was on everywhere for a while. Like Sci-Fi was re-airing PG versions of it. And it was just...
I met the actress who played the younger sister at a convention.
Oh, nice.
It was a My Little Pony convention because she voiced Princess Cadence.
God, did you also run into what's his name, Q?
John
DeLance.
But at that convention, I did meet John DiMaggio because I don't think it was just I don't think he voiced on there, but it was also just like it wasn't just.
It was any kind of voice actor just in town.
So that was great getting to meet him because, of course, Futurama I watched from the get go.
I'm surprised Giancarlo wasn't on an episode of that. He seems like.
Because it had quite, yeah, I mean, Weird Al was in an episode that it had a good few known people voicing in there here and there.
Lucy Liu, George Takei.
Oh, yeah. Well, George Takei, I can't say I'm not surprised. He's voiced a few things.
Oh, too. My. Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, even prepping for this episode, I was able to even watch some episodes that no one saw. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild how he's appeared in a few foreign films and animation just doing the American voiceover. I don't remember him at all, and I'm sure he doesn't remember his time on the awful Alex Cross movie.
Oh yeah, that. Well,
big fan of those books, and I was like, yeah, they didn't even try.
Interest because, okay, for what I hear, Tyler Perry was good in Gone Girl, but like
everything else,
like you do not fit the. You do not. I don't buy you as like a hard-boiled detective, like
right.
And where movies like Gone Girl apparently show he can have range, he just things like that with him playing a just trying to play a detective, like he just doesn't give that. He doesn't give off that energy.
Right, it's just like, not that aura.
Freeman, I can buy is giving off like you know this hard-boiled detective when he played the character.
Yeah, I mean he demands it, he echoes it,
and you know that's, some actors just you know have a certain type they can't play, and that's okay. Like when Marky Mark tried to play a math teacher, or no, a science teacher.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, mind you.
The whole script in general, I don't think he could have saved that regardless. And but I don't know if I'm going to see. Typically, if I picture Marky Mark playing a teacher, it'd be like a gym teacher or something.
Right. It's got to be someone with more cynicism or testosterone. Cut. Yeah.
But
and not something that requires much of a brain, but
yeah,
a lot of energy.
It seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
But. He has his limits of
kind of like how Tony Danza is good at playing a guy named Tony. So you know.
Yeah,
there you go.
Well, at least Marky Mark, at least he can play characters with different names.
There you go.
Like Dirk Diggler.
Oh man, I remember on one. I think it was an interview. I think it was with Aaron Paul, who plays Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad. He said he and Giancarlo first met on an episode of Ghost Whisperer where.
Oh yeah.
He was typecast often as Punks of the Week, and he ended up being a guy who shoots Giancarlo's character to death.
Oh.
And Giancarlo's ghost appears throughout or something in the episode. I did see this movie called Ash Tuesday, which is just about people who've been affected by 9/11. It came out on 2003, and then I think it finally got a wide Sundance release in like 2005 or 2006. It was okay, not a must see, but I was glad I saw it online. He didn't really have many lines, so I kind of was mad at the DVD for kind of making it look like he had a bigger role, but I thought it was interesting how he's just playing a homeless guy just kind of outside one of the diners, and he's just, he really acts very well with his eyes.
Oh yeah, I've got a few DVD covers like that where they make the make a certain actor look bigger than what they are in the movie.
Right, not just in the line of dialogue.
recently, like a couple years back, they came out with a Blu-ray version of Living in Oblivion, which is a movie, and they put him on the cover like he's second, and they give him second billing. Like, okay, while he is certainly important to the movie in the third act, he is not a main character.
Gotcha.
Or, let's see, there's the movie Smoke. The DVD cover for that has Harvey Keitel, Starker Channing, and Ashley Judd on the cover. And while Ashley Judd, that was like one of her earliest films, she really isn't in the, she's not in the movie. He's in one scene of the movie.
Right. And yet, like, seventh build, and you're like, still not very key to the movie. More of a mention, you know, featured extra. You know?
At least on DVD years after she got famous, so.
Mm-hmm. Or... Well, and I've talked to a few independent filmmakers on here who I've interviewed, and they've often said a lot of the same, where it's just the reason a lot of stuff just languishes in production development is, you know, once you get the whoever's going to, you know, rewrite the screenplay or direct, and a lot of those are just ridiculous. Like, they'll just blindly buy stuff and then realize, oh, but it sucks.
And then,
so should have never bought it to begin with. But yeah, they'll negotiate a price, let alone development deal, based on what investors they can get, based on what who's been cast. But then they lose those investors if the actor drops out because they're like, "Yeah, this is beneath me."
And then there was that. Oh yeah, there was that movie Stealth that had some delays, and when it did, by the time it was coming out, Jamie Foxx was the biggest name because that was the year he got his two Oscar nominations for Collateral and Ray.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Even though he really is more of a he's basically a sidekick character in the movie, which that was a movie, another movie my mom, my sister dragged me to see because they wanted to see it. And just like,
oh dear, bless your soul.
It was so.
My brother wanted to see it. And I was like, yeah, like, I know the names to it.
Jessica Biel might be a nice person, but I just have never found her to be that great an actress.
It doesn't help that she just knows how to pick them, which is like, nothing good.
With Edward Norton and Paul Giamatti and Rufus Sewell, like that one's not too bad, but it mainly helped because of those three guys being.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally there.
She was definitely the weakest link of the bunch.
You're right.
I do remember her voicing herself on BoJack Horseman and being funny in that, but that's like she's playing herself and someone's writing for her.
Yeah, Jessica Alba's had a more relevant career than her. I mean, at least she had her own TV show.
She's also okay here and there, and I hear she's friendly, but most of the time I just find her bland. Like, she's okay in Sin City, but my main attraction to that movie was getting to see, like, the more violent characters like Marv on screen.
There you go. I mean...
She's okay in it, although I do remember, like, people complaining.
I'm a Dark Angel fan, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I saw Dark Angel back in the day. I liked it okay.
Yeah, it's all good. I mean, basically, some of these people just really just had very lousy.
And then Michael Webb on GIS.
Basically, it is like they got sick of it, so then
he
ended
was on long for like over 10 years, and you know, he's got a new show.
Mm-hmm.
And
fortunately, Giancarlo has basically worked with most of these guys, but not really. I doubt he's had too many unpleasant stories or been on film sets where people drop their pants.
Definitely. I was many years ago. I was an extra on a movie.
Oh, nice.
I don't even remember. It was made in my hometown and independent movie. I don't even remember the title now. Like, but they needed people to be patrons at a bar and just like stand at a wall like you're talking to somebody.
Oh wow.
Film like a concert, I think.
Perfect.
Now they asked us to give our name and number, and they get back if they need to get back to us, but they never got back to me. So like I said, I don't remember what the movie was called. I don't know if it ever even got distributed anywhere.
That's the worst kind, because you don't know if it did get released, but it's under a different name, or
been like
no one else wants you to ever find about it because they're not proud of it. Or it got filmed and they just simply monkeyed around and then just didn't release it because it just wasn't perfected.
If I had to guess, 2006 or 7 is when that happened.
Jeez.
Yeah, so long time ago, and...
Man.
Haven't had that kind of...
I've had my share of unprofessional stuff that I hope, you know...
I mean, the was fine. Like, nothing got out of hand. Nobody was being rude or anything, so...
That's good, because I've been on sets where married people are clearly hitting on each other. I've been on sets where you can tell the sound guy is just asleep at the wheel. The camera guy is filming everything out of focus. Yeah. It's just like, man.
Plus, the people who were like performing the bands performing were pretty, I recall, being decent as well. Like, some of them were like in the basement. And so it was a fun experience.
Maybe it was a documentary.
Yeah. I don't regret doing it. I just wish I had remembered what the title was so I could like ever look up to see what happened if it ever got, you know. But like, yeah.
I guess the first step is somehow finding the name of the other actors, I guess.
Yeah, but again, I don't remember a whole lot of like what I did. Like, again, my job was, I stood there. I think like me and one other person like had a pretend conversation. Well, the camera went around filming, and the primary focus was like a concert or battle of the bands type situation.
Nice. Was it ever, you ever do the thing that a lot of extras do where they like mention like free kind of vegetables, apples, carrots?
No.
Fruits. It's like bananas, apples, carrots, or some shit like that. And it's like you repeat it again and again, and that's basically just makes it look like an actual legit conversation, just how you're stretching your mouth or whatever. I don't know.
Would imagine, yeah, you'd have to like, if you're just pretending to talk, you're just saying a bunch of either miming to say a bunch of random things. Apparently, looking this up recently, Sally Hawkins was an extra in Phantom Menace. She was like, but like in a large crowd.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
that was like her first movie, uncredited. But yeah, it's like, huh, what do you know?
Richard Armitage from, you know, Captain America 1 and the show Spooks is there briefly as one of the Naboo fighters. And then there's, you know, even Warwick Davis is playing a different, two different characters. So there you go.
I remember seeing him because I knew what he looked like. So
right.
Or the pod race, like the pod race, you see him among the crowd of like this group of people. So yeah. his commentary track for Willow, I remember being really entertaining.
Oh, absolutely.
He was like 17 when he got to make it, and it was like the first movie he did where he wasn't wearing like makeup or something. He got, you know, it was just his face, and he said it was a lot of fun working with everyone. also tried to pretend to be a father because his character's supposed to already be a father with two, but he had no kids at that point.
There you go. So,
but he's supposed to be, that's good to know that he had a good time making it.
Yeah, that definitely makes a difference.
That was a movie I watched plenty growing up.
Yeah.
It's a fun movie.
I have fun with it. Yeah,
early Ron Howard before he like I mean, before his filmmaking career really like exploded.
Yeah, Willow, man.
Which I mean, which I saw reruns as a kid of like Andy Griffin and Happy Days.
Right. Just think.
Good old night.
Just think. Oh man. So, any other pointers you want to say before we wrap up Giancarlo? Rewatch, like, again, on that Spike Lee documentary, I did see part of his clip of Mo Better Blues, so I instantly figured out, okay, he's playing Lacey.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was a cadet in Taps, and I totally forgot to point out to you the more recent movie Line of Duty, which is a fun Race Against Time kind of movie.
Yeah, Mo Better Blues, I saw that year. That's why I need to revisit. I saw it years ago, but it's been a while. Like I said, Smoke, I don't remember how big a role he has in that movie from 1995. That's, and its sequel, Blue in the Face, both solid films. He's got
great stuff. Yeah.
And Night on Earth is, if you can find, that was released by the Criterion a few years back. It's a good one. Like, the all five segments are fun, but his is probably my favorite one just because
best one, huh?
Nice. but they're all solid. All five segments are solid.
Nice. I know this movie's in with Paul Newman. Twilight gets no relation, gets talked about on occasion.
I remember that.
he does actually play a totally different Law and Order character where he's like a recurring attorney, and I recall that being pretty awesome because he was doing a lot of, you know, helping out other brothers, you know.
Yeah,
I really don't think he can go wrong at all. I know he's got a show called, actually a movie called The Long Home with a big all-star cast. So, I mean, he's going to keep being on these ensembles. I'll probably won't.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He's in the musical drama Stargirl. Okay. When I saw that, I thought that had to do with that stupid DC comic show. I was like, no.
Oh, wow. Look it up. Look it up. Twilight, that too, has quite the cast. As Clint Howard appears in it. Jason Clark.
Yeah.
Emmett Walsh, John Spencer, Margot Martindale, Liev Schreiber.
That's a great cast.
James Garner, Sacha Chang, Reese Witherspoon, Susan Sarandon.
He's in a really stupid movie that used to play on BET a lot with Ja Rule and Ving Rhames called Back in the Day. And I just remember him and the guy who played Mikey, Al Sapienza, on The Sopranos. I was just like, oh, this stupid, forgettable movie is better because they're in it.
I mean,
Tia Carrere's in it for like a brief minute.
There are movies like, yeah, you like for a brief moment, this movie's not too bad because these actors are at least entertaining and trying.
Right, as opposed to just painful, just working, should have hung it up years ago and yet just kept going.
Oh, Ja Rule's filmography, but he's not an actor.
No, not at all.
I don't know if he's improved any.
He was tolerable in Assault on Precinct 13. That's all I'll give him.
But typically musicians turned actors are rarely super.
Right.
Sean Combs can be really funny and stuff. Like, he was funny in Get Into the Greek. He's like drugged out of his mind, and that was.
There you go. I mean,
Ice Cube can be really funny.
Yeah. I mean, infiltrate the dealer, find that a supplier.
Like, I loved him in 21 Jump Street.
There you go. I mean, that's definitely embraced a different kind of his foul mouth side. I didn't realize that Giancarlo was also. Wait. Am I on the right resume? Yeah, he was on the movie Go Tell It on the Mountain, which is a TV play that was featured on PBS American Playhouse. I know I saw it some time a while back.
Got uncredited Brother from Another Planet. That's a good movie.
Wait, he's in that?
Yeah, it's a man getting arrested, so he's uncredited, so it's probably like a brief scene.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, mainly a, like, there's pretty much a bunch of actors in there that are, like, you know, from places, but of course the main.
So I guess you could say he's kind of like John Leguizamo, who we've covered on here previously, where he was able to just show a bunch of chops to the right people, and basically that was how he was able to avoid a lot of just playing nothing but mugger number five.
Yeah. And John Leguizamo was another actor I've liked in a lot of things.
I mean, you take what you can get. It's just cool to see someone stretch.
I mean, hell, Super Mario Bros. Is probably, like, my first ever guilty pleasure movie. Like, I saw it when I was 7, and, like, I was entertained, but I didn't, like, I didn't, even at that age where I thought everything was good, probably, I didn't think it was necessarily a good time while watching it.
Sometimes that's how you get to take them. It's like, this might not be a movie, but it's something else. It's funny.
And the behind-the-scenes stories about it are hilarious. Like,
he's got
an autobiography he wrote, and he has a whole chapter dedicated to it. A lot of his chapters are about certain movies he made, but so he talks about this movie, of course, because it was like one of his first major starring roles. Apparently, he said Bob Hoskins was great to work with.
I'm sure he was, because Bob, you've seen how animated he's been about it. He's like, don't bring up questions
They drank a lot to get through it.
Director of The Killing Fields.
The directors wanted to make an adult movie. The studio wanted a kids movie, which, go figure. But hey, I'll say this. They took a video game with almost no premise and turned it into that. It's like, well, that's something.
Right.
It's amazing. Just like the relic of its time. The first video game movie, super 90s, and just, yeah.
Of course, video game movies have started improving, but the bar is still pretty low for a good one.
Oh, so I did rewatch a few other things just for this. I didn't realize he was in the Benjamin Bratt drama Pinero, but I did basically, since the Muhammad Ali drama with Will Smith is, you know, 3 hours long, and I only had so much time. I basically just fast forward until I came to across his scene. Yeah. And just another example, just a guy who just, like, it doesn't matter how brief the segment is, he just stands out somehow. He knows how to play the camera. He's clearly, I just get a feel that he's definitely looked at himself in the mirror enough times. He knows how to play it instead of, oh, I'm not sure, you know?
Yeah. Well, he's just very good at just, I guess, even just doing a facial expression, like, without say, I mean, like, well, in Star Wars, like, before his character really talks, he just has a good
impression. Like, faster, you know, slower.
He has a good presence to him.
Right. Nothing limited about him. Did you ever hear about the Netflix show The Get Down?
Sounds familiar.
Basically, it was like head writer of The Shield, Sean Ryan, created by Baz Luhrmann, co-starring Jimmy Smits. Shameik Moore. I always heard it was pretty awesome and catchy and wacky. Kind of just, it's wild how he's also the narrator of Dear White People, the TV version.
Oh yeah, I think I knew that.
So I think it is interesting how he's getting all kinds of gigs. There's no limit.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's not many actors get that kind of, like,
no.
I mean, sure, they're a character actor, but they might get just playing one role every time.
Right. It's like, not. I mean, he might as well. I'd like to see him in some other franchise and just kind of just basically demolish that franchise and say, "See, I made it better." You know,
let's put him in something Star Trek related.
I was just about to say that. Just be some admiral or something. Even be on the Orville, he could be a funny role of that. Just be like, "Do you want me to rip you a new one? Because you're not following the prime directive." Oh man. Yeah. I'll let you close out. Just any other final notes, but other than that, I think we pretty much have steered through and through.
Yep. It's been fun.
Absolutely.
I got to join another one of these.
Likewise. Yeah. I was glad you were able to jump on here. We had a few other people who wanted to, jump on, but you know, life gets in the way. Yeah. So where can we find you on the interwebs, Geek with the Clip-Ons?
I have my own website. It's called geekwithclipons.com.
Nice, nice.
I also have on that site, I have like links to various other things, like my Linktree, because I also design stuff for shirts on TeePublic and Redbubble. I have a Patreon. I have a YouTube channel, but I haven't really done anything with it, but I hope to do something with it at some point.
Okay, well, I mean,
so, but my main,
my
website where I write reviews and make actor and director profiles.
There were some cool reviews I saw you sharing, because I mean, you pretty much just approached it just naturally. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna just try and add this. Here's the joy of this. Here's why the nostalgia of this movie is alive. Here's why this movie is actually a very inspirational thing.
I also started like clicking more with me when I was able to make little comic strips with screen caps for certain ones. Like the one where I really started doing I think the first one I did that was I did a review of The Wizard where I had like a lot of, which is a movie I think is actually like not terrible. Like it's decent. It's like a decent family film.
You would watch a double feature of it with probably The Last Starfighter or Ready Player One.
Maybe, yeah. As far as it goes, this is another movie where the cast is definitely trying, and like the director, from what I've heard, like, you know, they're trying to make a solid family movie, but yeah, it also had to be a Nintendo commercial. But in that regard, in terms of movies that get like labeled among the worst ever, like, and that ever appears on this, I'm like, I really cannot call this among the worst movies ever.
It doesn't stand out as just incompetent. It's just more just
like, yeah. Like, I can see why Mac and Me is on those lists of movies.
Oh, yeah, I think everyone
is still entertaining as hell.
Oh, jeez.
because of just the blatantness of it. McDonald's probably was the blatantness of how E.T. ripoff it is.
Right?
It's like, oh, wow. We're not even trying.
What's happening? What's happening?
And of course, the famous wheelchair cliff dot.
Oh, yeah. Paul Rudd was probably rich with how many times he's been introduced using that.
And I'll say this, the kid actor playing that role, who was actually in a wheelchair, he himself, I felt, was trying. It was his first and only movie, but he was, I thought, giving a decent performance for what he had to work with.
Well, our friend of the show, Andrew Devoff, the Wishmaster, one of his first few movies.
Because, yeah, in the original cut, he shoots him.
Oh, nice.
Like, did you not know that, yeah, the original cut of Mac and Me, like, originally the cop falls and actually shoots him. There's apparently a Japanese version of the movie on VHS that has that original footage.
Oh, nice.
And like, I learned this from like a reviewer I follow on YouTube. His first review ever 10 years ago was Mac and Me. So like, he discovered this at some point.
Oh, dear.
So it's like, he says that explains like why it seemed odd that he was just like killed by the blast from an explosion that wasn't even very near him. But like, it's like, okay. Also, you see alternate, and there's alternate cuts of that where it does show like when they're trying to revive him, like you see.
McDonald's had money to blow out the window, but basically all of it was spent on the in advertising, so they're like, we can't reshoot this, we just gotta make it work.
But yeah, at some point someone thought, yeah, it's okay if we shoot this kid, but then at some point they thought, wait, no, that might be too dark.
I guess the explosions and the soundtrack's well done, it's just all the other bullshit that gotta get through. Oh, movies, man. Movies.
Yeah.
Oh, glad you could join in the fun, and...
Me too.
And to another time. Another time.
Yep. Get you later.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast Cure All, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Hey, I heard you like movies.
I heard you like to hustle.
I heard you like podcasts.
Well, guess what?
There's a podcast for you out there called The Home Video Hustle.
Damn right.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I put a bunch of movies in a bag, and PJ picks one out at random. Mm-hmm. And then we just watch it. We talk about it for maybe like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever we feel like doing, wherever the conversation leads us.
But do we actually talk about the movie?
Most of the time.
Ah.
Tangents galore.
Yes.
So believe me, we may be a movie podcast, but it's not always about movies. We might talk about video games.
Mm-hmm. Music. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the big one, music. Sometimes we might get a little bit of politicalness in there.
Yes.
Sometimes we may just, oh, you know what we like to do? We like to tell stories, PJ.
Ah, yes.
I am the master storyteller
yes.
of the podcast realm. Undefeated. So if you like to hear about movies, video games, whatever foolishness comes to our mind, the most random stuff you can think of, check out the Home Video Hustle. You can find us on the Stitchers.
Yes.
The Google Play.
Yes.
Apple Podcasts.
What else?
Podbean.
What else?
Podcast Addict.
Goddamn.
All that. Ain't no reason you can't get your hustle on. We everywhere. Worldwide, baby.
Hustle, motherf***. Hustle.
Hey, we can't cuss in the promo, PJ.
Ah.
We gotta be family friendly. There may be podcasts out there that don't want his hair to say
ah.
All that good fun stuff.
Well, you.
Yeah. Don't run the listeners away, PJ.
Ah, I'm sorry.
But this is going kind of long.
Yes.
So we'll end this and say, hey, check out the Home Video Hustle every Friday on all the various podcast outlets. Peace.
Peace.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster. And while Witch didn't make it to the top of the world, he did make the Gangs of Hollywood podcast. So join the gang and enjoy a movie review podcast about movie gangs, gangsters, mobsters, and the mayhem they cause. You can find GOH Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at GOH Pod, at www.gohpod.com, as well as your favorite podcast listening app. And remember, say hello to your little friend for me.
If you take two old punk rockers who are past their prime, put them in front of a movie screen and give them a podcast, what do you get? Cinema Punks. Cinepunks. It's the mixtape of movies.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How
did
you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 bana.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. We're the one that's plot holes and gratuitous movies. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She Podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Semenov, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Hi, everybody. It's Mac Jackson. I wanted to invite you to a new site called the Forever Adventure Network. This website has everything. Pictures, videos, blogs. There's original music by Harmony Constant. Two podcasts. One is the MacGyver Podcast, where we celebrate Richard Dean Anderson, his iconic roles, and how it's influenced our lives. There's episode discussions, interviews, and life conversations. The second podcast is the Never Gets Old Podcast, where we celebrate all the best things that we love in life, from TV, movies, music, and comics. The site is also the home for the MacGyver SG-1 audio series, an ongoing adventure series that continues the adventures of MacGyver and SG-1. There are also multiple stores to choose from for all of your pop culture and adventure needs. Come on by and check us out today. And thanks for joining the adventure.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a-